Great. Thank you so much. So happy to be back with you all. It's been a while since I was here, almost a year, I think. I'm so happy to see many of you that I know from previous times practicing together, and also everyone who's new to me or new to Sangha Live. Just a really warm welcome. And happy Halloween. Happy Dia de los Muertos, Day of the Dead. It begins tonight until November 2nd. As we practice and meditate today, we can keep an awareness of this practice by many people on the planet today and tomorrow of being open to this portal to the world of those who've passed on, honoring them and remembering them. So today we're looking at the practice of inclusiveness. And so this meditation that I'd like to begin with is about how we can include others and ourselves in our hearts, just as we are, just as they are. And so this is a practice that I learned from a Dharma teacher who's French-Canadian in Montreal. His name is Pascal Auclair. And it's about love, offering love as renunciation. We don't usually think of renouncing as a kind of love, but this meditation is about letting go, renouncing all of our, well, whatever we can of our expectations, our ways of demanding that people be a certain way, that we be a certain way, as an act of love. So it's really just playing around with this idea in the meditation. You don't have to think of that you have to do this all the time, but in the meditation, we're just going to explore what it might be like to include someone, include ourselves so fully that we can renounce this sense of the way we put the men in a box, the way we put ourselves in a box, and require that we meet these criteria in order to be good, in order to be lovable, in order to think well of ourselves. So it's about releasing ideas, renouncing our notions, giving space. So it's coming into a position of stability. It might be seated, it might be lying down, it might be standing, or some other position in between. And feeling into what your body needs today to touch into your own presence and wisdom, and also to be at ease. So a position of stability and freedom. Letting your body find a posture that supports you in ease and also supports you in presence. So feeling your body in space, noticing the space that your body is occupying. And letting yourself claim your belonging, that you belong right here where you are. You can take up this space. You can really be right where you are. Taking up this space, filling up this space with your presence, And taking time for yourself here and now. There's nowhere to go, nothing to do. Opening to what's here and now as you allow the body to settle, to find its home right where you are. Inviting the mind to rest in the body as the body finds its rest on the earth, within the earth. Now I invite you to bring someone to mind that you feel close to, someone that you're connected to in an important way. Let this person come into your awareness, seeing them in your mind's eye, getting a sense of their energy, of their character. This could be anyone, even a pet, an animal that you live with. Consider just for a short time what it would be like if, as an act of love, you renounced your expectations of them. If you released your demands of how they should be, how they should live, how they should do things, how they should interact with you. What would happen if you let go of these expectations? This box that you might put them in. This isn't something you need to do forever, but just right in this moment, you can check this out, play with this temporarily, how it would feel. A letting go of some wish that you have that they should fulfill. Doing this as an act of love. Offering them immense space, vast freedom to be just the way they are. to live their life the way it is to unfold. Not according to your desires, opening your heart to accept them in all of their beauty, all of their goodness, and also in all of their challenging aspects, all of their shadow sides. Feel what that's like in the body to consider that possibility. And now we imagine how it would be if this person were to release or renounce their expectations of us. The demands, the expectations, the requirements that they place on us. How would it be to be free of those limitations or pressures? Which they would release as an act of love. How would it feel to be the recipient of a love that was really spacious and not dependent on us fulfilling their desires? Visualizing them offering you so much freedom and so much love at the same time. And how would it be if you were to renounce those expectations of yourself? Yourself in the past, yourself in the present, yourself in the future. These ideas that you have, that you impose on yourself in the past, that I should have done that, or I should have been like this. I wish I hadn't made that decision or that choice. What if just for a moment you forgave all those debts that you hold against yourself in the past? Complete amnesty. offering yourself acceptance and kindness for who you were in the past, just as you were. Releasing the demands, the requirements, the expectations that you should be like other people, fit into some mold. And how would it be to let go of these expectations that you hold of yourself in the present? Demands or requirements of how you should act, how you should look, how your body should be, how your mind should be, how your meditation should be. All the ways we put ourselves into a box in the present, wishing we were different. What if you set yourself free from all of those boxes, renouncing as an act of love, including yourself in your heart, just as you are. Offering yourself great freedom and space in the present. You don't have to be anything else, do anything else to be worthy of your own regard, your own love. And if you also released expectations of who you should become in the future, renouncing as an act of love the expectations of how you should age or what kind of things you want to learn or develop in yourself. The stipulations you have for your future. What would it be like just for a time to release those? Loving yourself in the future, regardless of what happens, of who you are, or what choices you make. maybe expectations that you won't grow older or that you won't lose capacities that you have now. How would that be to release that way of clinging on to ourselves as we are now? And just giving ourselves over to life, to the unfolding of our life. Now turning our love as renunciation to the wider world and noticing if there's a particular group of people that you might have expectations of. Maybe people in power or people that are different from you, or that are not in power, people that are dependent on others. It's noticing if there are expectations you have of others in the world around you that you require them to be a certain way. You have demands and expectations of them. What would it be like to renounce these as an act of love? Not about being passive or living in a way that communicates anything goes. But seeing beyond their actions to the fundamental humanity that's there underneath their actions, and loving them just for being another human who also needs love. Releasing just for a time whatever is an obstacle to our love for these people, this group. And opening to life itself. How would it be just for a moment to let go of our demands on life itself? That life should unfold in this way and not that way. As an act of love, including fully in our hearts, in our beings, the way life is. Letting go of the demands. The
seizing onto how we think it should be. Just letting that loosen up and offering life the freedom to be the way it is. Taking deep breaths and honoring life just as it is. Now just letting yourself rest back. You can let all of that go. And just feel your body, feel your breath. Resting and receiving whatever is here in this moment. Not doing anything. And we'll listen to a sound of the bell to close the meditation, letting the sound of the bell communicate this deep inclusiveness of who you are, of how your life is. This sound, let it penetrate you and support you in this renunciation as an act of love, removing the obstacles to loving what is. Thank you for your practice, and you can gently open your eyes if you had them closed, bring some movement into your body, and slowly return to our common space here together. And I am putting into the chat the links to Pascal leads this meditation in English and also French if you want to listen to his version. He's a really lovely teacher. I'm grateful to him for sharing this meditation with me. So if you feel like putting a word in the chat about what you're noticing or what's happening in your body on the other side of that meditation, it's always lovely to touch what's how the Sangha body is doing. So just really literally a word or a phrase, and I'll read out a few. So freedom, expansion, stillness, opening, more peace, soothed, relaxed, spacious, peace, ease, liberating, a very nice feeling, lighter, serenity, space, ambivalence, great meditation that brings out inner conflicts, yes, relaxed and sense of freedom, fatigue, release, acceptance, relaxing, humility, surprisingly, grief, breathing fully, conflicted. Yeah. Really appreciate everyone's shares and honoring all of your experiences, whatever they may be. I'm not untied. Yeah. So for the teaching today, I'll continue on this looking into inclusiveness and also the practice of equanimity. So there's a power that can help us meet the intense challenges of this chaotic time that we're facing, multiple pandemics of COVID, of climate chaos, of racism, economic, political upheaval, uncertainty. And that power is equanimity, which is one of the faces of love. And it's a face of love. But what's unique about equanimity is that it helps balance the other kinds of ways we might express love. And it keeps us grounded. So compassion is another face of love. And if we don't have equanimity, then our compassion can burn us out. It can lead to compassion fatigue, or we can outpour to an extent that we become exhausted or overly identified with the situation. So equanimity can keep us resourced and in our center. The word for equanimity is upeksha in Sanskrit. In Pali, it's upekha. And this word is translated often as equanimity, but also as non-attachment, non-discrimination, impartiality, tolerance, or letting go. The word is formed from the prefix upa, that can mean over, all around, and the root ik or iksh, meaning to look or to see. So it's this capacity to see all around, to see the full picture, like we're on the top of a high mountain. We can see all the sides of the landscape. We can perceive the situation in its entirety and not taking sides. So in India, the word was also sometimes used to mean to see with patience. So it's like also about time, like taking this longer view of the situation, not just this one moment. We could also see that as how we can see with understanding. So we don't take things as personally. And so we can remain more at ease, more equanimous. And so it's not dry or indifferent, but it's affectionate. And it offers a really tangible presence. It's kind of like a loving grandmother that has a bit more space relating to the grandchild maybe than the parent. So the love is there, the kindness is there, but it has less of the reactivity or anxiety. My teacher, Thich Nhat Hanh, offers another dimension to this definition, teaching that upeksha is also the practice of inclusiveness, this ability to see and take in and open to accept the situation and also the many sides of the situation, to not be dogmatic, but to see the interbeing nature. That's a kind of inclusive perspective, to see that even if I disagree with you, or even if you're causing great harm, we still inter are. I have to see the way in which we're interdependent. I have to include you somehow in the calculus of the whole, rather than try to exclude you and take you out of the picture. And so being inclusive means we give and we have spaciousness. But how do we face the world as it is and not be flattened by it, not be completely overwhelmed by it? So Thich Nhat Hanh writes, "When I was a novice, I could not understand why, if the world is filled with suffering, the Buddha has such a beautiful smile. Why isn't he disturbed by all the suffering? Later, I discovered that the Buddha has enough understanding, calm, and strength. That is why the suffering does not overwhelm him. He's able to smile to suffering because he knows how to take care of it and help transform it. We need to be aware of the suffering, but retain our clarity, calmness, and strength so we can help transform the situation. The ocean of tears cannot drown us if karuna or compassion is there. That is why the Buddha's smile is possible." So that is a deep inclusiveness of seeing that suffering is there, but we can have this sense of stability that can hold the pain of suffering and see more than what's on the surface. See the reality from many different perspectives. So it's an important question we can bring to situations of conflict or difficulty in our life. How can I look at this situation with inclusiveness? How can I see more than what I see right now? And so it's always the case that even when there is great injustice, great harm, great inequality, great violence happening, maybe near us, maybe far away in the world, there is also love happening, there's care, there is justice, there is courage, there is compassion, there is wisdom. And we want to be able to see both. We want to be able to include both. We don't want to turn away from the suffering, from the difficulty in our world, but we also don't want to turn away or forget the things happening every day that make our world truly beautiful and wonderful. So inclusiveness, equanimity is about acknowledging that both of those things are happening. And how do we stand in the reality of both of those? And so we can see when we look with these eyes of equanimity, of inclusiveness, that suffering doesn't have to disappear for goodness, for happiness, for beauty to be there. Because life includes all of these things. This holding everything is one of the qualities of equanimity, of inclusiveness. And that is the nature of life, that they coexist and we can touch them. Even in difficulty, we can touch that there is healing and well-being. And in the midst of our well-being and ease, we can also touch that suffering is there too. They're not separate. So this kind of ability to hold and to include these seemingly opposite things is really needed right now. This kind of steadiness of equanimity, because things are so uncertain. There's so much upheaval. There's so much disruption, and it's only, you know, we're on a down slope. It's going to be becoming worse, this experience of disruption. And just in this past few months, you know, I've been bailing water out of my basement when there were rains in New York like there's never been before. There's never have people experienced that much rain falling in such a short amount of time. So our basement was flooded. People lost their homes in the New York area. In May, there was the cyber attack on a gas line in the eastern United States, and people were not able to get gas for their vehicles. That's, you know, all these things that are, you know, we waiting on our mail. Everything's delayed because of COVID delays and shortages of labor and shipping delays. So, you know, there's all these things that we are used to relying on that are less and less reliable. And we don't know, you know, if they're going to return to their previous state. So this quality of looking with steadiness at our world is needed now more than ever. There's so much political upheaval in the United States, this attempted coup, this insurrection at the Capitol, January 6th. How do we relate to these forces of violence, of deceit, right? With clarity, with fierce compassion. How do we call people to justice without dehumanizing them? How do we see from all sides and include people in our hearts, even if we are very opposed to what they're doing or what they believe? So my dad and I were reflecting on this violent assault on January 6th at the U.S. Capitol that wasn't prevented, even though there was ample warning. And my dad is a Dharma teacher and a Christian minister, and he said, when we see ourselves as victims, that is the separate self. When we see ourselves as beloved, that is no self. So when we see ourselves as beloved, full of loving kindness, we see ourselves in everyone and everyone in ourselves. And so we have a force with which to meet ignorance, discrimination, and even violence in others, so that it doesn't cripple us by making us hateful, by making us fearful or reactive. So when we see ourselves as beloved, we don't have enemies. That is a very profound experience of inclusiveness, not having enemies. And this is what Thich Nhat Hanh spoke about during the war in Vietnam, that other people are not our enemies. A human can never be our enemy. Only delusion, hatred, ignorance that they carry in them is our enemy, is what we need to uproot. We can uproot it in ourselves. We can help uproot it in others. And if we see ourselves as beloved, not as victims, we can encounter those with whom we disagree or are morally opposed to without malice. That is the power of equanimity and inclusiveness. So there's a film I watched called The Best of Enemies on Netflix. It's based on a true story of a town in, I think it's South Carolina, in the 70s, where they were forced to decide on the question of integration of schools. There was a black school for the black children, a white school for the white children, and the school of the black children burned, so they didn't have a school. And so it was about these two people. One was a black woman, and she was an activist in that town, and the other was a white man who was the chairman of the Ku Klux Klan, or the leader. This is this white supremacist organization that is built on hatred of other races. And it's a beautiful film, but there is really this practice of inclusiveness on the part of the black woman and the black community that is really inspiring. And it is this depth of equanimity, of not even as the people who are in the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan, continue to be bigoted and full of hatred and ignorance. There is this reaching out to the humanity in them, particularly this man who she's working with side by side to figure out what the community is going to decide about integration. And it shows the power of this, respecting the humanity of someone, even if we vehemently disagree with them. And so there's a deep transformation in this man, because of the inclusiveness in this woman and in the Black community. It's I really recommend this film, The Best of Enemies. And it's based on a true story. So when we touch this capacity of inclusiveness in ourselves, it has a transformative effect on us and on the people around us, sometimes in surprising ways. So true love, according to Thich Nhat Hanh, if our love contains elements of attachment, discrimination, prejudice, of grasping onto opinions, then it's not true love. So this meditation is about, the meditation we just practiced, it's really about letting go of our opinions, opening our hearts to really embrace what is, and that embracing, including, gives us insight into how we might cultivate that humanity in another so that it can arise in ways that it hasn't been able to arise yet. Because we are all malleable. We are works in progress. So someone may be victim of very dangerous and harmful beliefs, but that doesn't mean they will always be that way. And so we may have an opportunity, if we are in contact with a person, to water a seed in them that hasn't had a chance to be watered, of their own inclusiveness, of their own more beautiful side of their humanity than what they're showing, than what's been nourished in them until now. So, This is an aspect of love, and it's an aspect of what's known in the Buddhist tradition as limitless love. So this quality of equanimity, of inclusiveness, can be developed in us without limit. It can become an immeasurable force in us that is, you know, that grows bigger and bigger and bigger and never stops growing bigger. So that's quite a thought to imagine this capacity that we each have to develop this smile of the Buddha, this equanimity, this heart of love that is boundless, that grows to infinity, never stops growing. So I will end with that invitation to all of us to take this path of growing our hearts to infinity. Thank you so much for your kind attention. And maybe we listen to a sound of the bell, just feel ourselves, feel our body, feel our breath, and then we'll transition to the question and answer time. So, George explained already that you're welcome to put your questions in the ask a question area. And I also just want to announce before we move into the questions or the reflections and responses, I think George mentioned at the beginning that I'm offering a course that starts on November 2nd. It's for a month, 4 weeks, called We Were Made for These Times. It's based on my book of the same title. It's a companion course. But I did want to make sure you knew that if you signed up for the course by November 2nd, you would also get a 30% discount on the book. We Were Made for These Times, 10 Lessons in Moving Through Change, Loss, and Disruption. So, Hope you'll join us. Thank you for those of you here that will be joining us. Happy to go on this course with you. And wanted to let you know about the book discount. So here are some questions. I'll read one. My cousin, who was a second mom for me as I grew up in a turbulent home, has just passed away. Even though she was 87, I feel a hole inside me. Is this grief? Thank you for this question. I think that is grief, and I really express my deepest condolences to you in losing your aunt, your cousin, your second mom. It is very much an experience of grief that we feel part of us is gone because that person has become part of us in our relating and loving them. And it's important to give that experience space and respect, and to let the process of that grief have its flow, the ebbs and the flow of that experience. And one practice that I find very supportive in times of grief is to recall what it is that you loved about your cousin, your second mom, and in what ways you can be a continuation of her by living those qualities in your daily life. So when those we love die, they do continue on in us, and we can share the wonderful qualities they offered us with other people. And in that way, your cousin, your second mom, lives on in you, in the way you care for others. So reflecting on the ways we can support someone we loved that passed to continue on in us can be a way of bringing some relief to our grief. So we all embrace you very deeply in this time of loss. Thank you for your question. George, shall we take a moment now for Victoria to ask their question directly?
Hello. Hi, Kyra. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Hi, Victoria.
Hi. I have been working, I come out of a Christian tradition, but I was formed apart from any actual denomination or anything. It was just from actually reading the Bible when I was very young and then continuing to read it. So I'm very, very sort of independent. But I have always, for a variety of reasons, always been interested in all of the spiritual traditions, and I feel like they're all sort of inadequate ways to define the holy or the divine. Mm-hmm. So knowing your background, I mean, I don't know your background. All I know is what Jorge said at the beginning. But I've heard some of your talks before, and I'm really looking forward to your course. But I wanted to have the opportunity to ask you, because since the pandemic started, I've really been intensively studying, particularly Buddhism, but also some other, you know, Sufism and other like the mystical traditions. And I'm looking for equivalents, like in other words, to me, it's like learning a foreign language where you're describing the same things but in different language. And with the four Brahmaviharas, and you know, you talked today about. It seemed like the practice was a metta practice, basically. And then talking about the equanimity, the upekkha, I was just wondering how you personally would translate those terms into what would be considered like a Christian language, because the nuances, I feel like, are so important. And when I've talked to my Christian friends about Buddhism or my Buddhist friends about Christianity, sometimes I feel like there are little nuances that are hard to put into language so that we can have a fruitful, productive conversation. So I was just, I just want to put that out there and see what you, because you have a you know, diverse background as well.
Yeah, thank you. That's a really deep and interesting question, because I don't know what I haven't studied Christianity in a, you know, scholarly way. I've practiced it growing up as a child, but it wasn't something I delved into, except actually through Buddhism, because Thich Nhat Hanh has written a number of books about Christianity, which actually helped me understand my Christianity much more deeply. So there might be some answers to your question in some of his books, like Living Buddha, Living Christ, or Going Home, Buddha and Jesus as Brothers. But, I would actually say, so my partner is an Episcopal priest, and we are embarking on a new group of Buddhist Christian community of study, practice, and action starting in January. It's there's a link on my website where you can sign up, and we'll send you information when we start our group. But we'll be teaching together Buddhist and Christian practices, and this would be a really interesting subject to hear him speak about. He has a lot of depth work in the mystical and contemplative practices of Christianity. And so I would invite you to come join us. We'll meet once a month starting in January. I think it's so true what you said, that there is this
inadequacy in all traditions to describe the fullness. And so you actually need lots of different doorways into it, because we're all different and we each have different needs of what resonates with us. And so, but it's really useful when you're in one tradition to know, oh, this is how this tradition sees it. This is their angle, because it enriches you so much. Mm-hmm. The phrase that comes to my mind in relation to equanimity is this phrase from the Bible, the peace that passeth all understanding. It's like a depth of clarity that's beyond words, that has this deep, right? That's what's coming to mind as a Christian, maybe mirroring of this talk about this exploration of equanimity and inclusiveness. And certainly in Christianity, there is this deep and very profound tradition of renunciation, and that meditation was about love as renunciation. You know, that when we go into the forest, when we go into the desert, when we pull ourselves away in order to fast, to stay up through the night, those are practices that bring about clarity. In fact, I was just talking with George about this before we started the call. He might have something he might share about this. But when we, in Christian tradition and Buddhist and many traditions, when we renounce things that bring us comfort, that renunciation can be a portal to deeper seeing, deeper touching of reality. It's not renouncing out of because this is how things get twisted too in various traditions of like punishing our body or, feeling disgusted with the physical. And so that's why we renounce. That's not the intention, but the intention is really to focus our intention somewhere. And so we have to gather ourselves from these different areas where we put our attention and bring it into this thing that's really important for us for that time. And so we retreat. This is a Halloween visit, so my dog is going wild. So that element of renouncing as a kind of love, right? Like Catherine Doherty is a Christian mystic.
She's wonderful.
Yeah, she talked about going into having a desert day once a week where you go away into your silent, quiet place. You practice meditation, fasting. You just eat bread and drink water for one day. And you ask for the Holy Spirit, for God to give you guidance. And then you bring that guidance back to your family, to your community. And you bring in that sense of renunciation into your day, right? Gandhi fasted once a week. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh, Thay, encourage us to fast every year for, a period of time. As a nun, I would do that, in the spring. Many of us would fast, and it did bring insights into, not everyone is their bodies. That's not good for everyone to do. But, as a young person in that context, that I found that very beneficial for me. So those are some of the ways I can see the love, the metta, the equanimity, having corresponding elements in the Christian tradition. And just to say, I look forward to delving into this a lot more, because there's already a lot of wonderful people that have been doing this work, like in the Christian tradition, like Father Beat Griffith, mm-hmm. Many Christian Catholic monks who've gone and studied Buddhism or Hinduism or other traditions and brought them in to the Christian tradition, and then vice versa. You have the Dalai Lama who you know, it's very, you know, he and Bishop Tutu are like brothers, right? Or Thay, you know, with Thomas Merton and Dr. King and others. So we have people's footsteps we can travel in. We've done a lot of work already in bridging the divides.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you so much. I look forward to your group because that's exactly my interest. So it'll be wonderful to join that. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Be well. Okay. So the next question, for me, the hardest thing is when I feel personally betrayed by the actions of someone close to me. Everything else I can find acceptance for, but when people fail to stand up against my abusers, I, as the abused, suffer and have a hard time holding that suffering and accepting the silence of those close to me. These are age-old experiences, but they are still hard to sit with. Any thoughts on scenarios like this? Yeah. Thank you so much, Helen, for this question. So I think we can say something is wrong, like it's really wrong for those who know that you have been abused and who have remained silent. That is not right action. That's not compassionate action. And how do we at the same time it's not about accepting their behavior, because we need to stand up and say, this shouldn't have happened. We want to protect ourselves. We want others to be protected and not be exposed to abuse. We can still accept that humanity, that there is humanity in the person who is remaining silent, that there is suffering, there is maybe their own trauma that is blocking them from being able to see the situation clearly or act in integrity. And so not to excuse them, but to look with these eyes of understanding, which is one of the ways of talking about inclusiveness and equanimity. It's this it is really, we inter are with this person. They inter are with us. And if we were in the same situation that they were in, maybe growing up in the same context, having the same seeds watered that they had watered in them, it's likely we would do the same thing that they are doing. It doesn't mean it's right. It doesn't mean it's acceptable. But if we can put ourselves there, we may understand that they are also caught somehow in the situation. If they were truly free, they wouldn't remain silent. But so they are somehow caught. And so, in a situation where there's abuse, where there's violence, where there's war, oppression, it's sometimes hard to see it this way, but everyone is a victim. Both the perpetrators and those who are victimized. Everyone is a victim. And yes, we need to address the suffering of those who are victimized. And we also need to see that those who are the perpetrators are deeply scarred. And that's the reason that they are doing this harm to others. That's this big view, this zooming out of equanimity to see everybody has a story of what led them to that action. So when I lived in Germany as a nun, we lived in a building that had been a psychiatric hospital or a hospital for the mentally disabled. And it was taken over in World War II by the Nazis and turned into a hotel for Nazi workers. And those 700 patients were euthanized or starved to death. We learned this after we took over this building. It's the European Institute of Applied Buddhism is what it's called now. And when we learned this history, this very tragic history, it was very heavy. And what we did as monastics, every day we do the hungry ghost offering in Buddhism, where in Asian monasteries, you'll see monastics offering food at the end of the day, incense and offering a chant, playing the little wooden drum and the bell. And it's to invite any hungry spirits, hungry ghosts to come and receive the offering. In that prayer, in that ceremony we would do every day, we read a special prayer that was praying for those who had been killed, who had been euthanized, but also praying for the perpetrators of that terrible, terrible act that happened, in our building. And we were acknowledging that those people only did that because they were also victims of very deluded beliefs and ideas. So, I think it's really important to care for ourselves and our own emotions first in an experience of abuse. In the book Reconciliation by Thich Nhat Hanh, it's Healing the Inner Child, Reconciliation, Healing the Inner Child by Thich Nhat Hanh, may be a supportive book of teachings on caring for ourselves and our wounded child. And as we heal, perhaps we can have more inclusiveness, more understanding for the ways others in that situation of abuse are also victims of the situation. It doesn't mean we allow the abuse to continue. It doesn't mean that we don't do everything in our power to protect ourselves, to protect others, to prevent people from continuing to abuse. But it can bring some sense of peace to our hearts to see the woundedness of everyone in the situation. So another question is, what do we do with the urge to want to punish another? I'm glad to see that your question was upvoted, because I think it's important that we see when we have this urge to punish. It's a very human urge. We're not alone. And others seem to be very interested in this question also. So thank you. I think one thing we can do is recognize that we are not alone. There's not something wrong with us because we have the urge to punish. And we can also be happy that our practice is stable enough that mindfulness is showing us, oh, I have the urge to punish. Without mindfulness, we wouldn't see that. We would just punish. We wouldn't notice that we have it. So that's already really important, is to celebrate that we are noticing the urge to punish, because then we have a choice if we act on it or not. And when we notice that the urge to punish is there, we can get curious about it. We can get interested in it, and we can explore it. How does it show up? How do you notice that that's arising in you? Is it a physical sensation in your body? Is there tension? Is there heat? Are there words that come along with it of, you know, what you're telling yourself about this person? What's the story that's arising? Like, to turn, instead of focusing on the person that you want to punish, to turn the light of mindfulness inward and explore, what is that about in you? Is that something you learned from someone else? Did someone else punish you? Is that why you want to punish someone? Like, explore it as a topic of your meditation, and with gentleness, with kindness, not judging yourself for wanting to punish, but really befriending that wish to punish, because it's a part of us. It can teach us a lot. It has a lot of information in there. And so sitting down with it and saying, okay, this urge to punish, I want to get to know you better in this walking meditation or sitting meditation or even a journaling session. Let it speak. Maybe you journal and you let this part of you write what it wants to say. Why does it want to punish? Maybe it wants to protect something, and that's why it wants to punish. There could be things that are very wholesome underneath that wish to punish. Maybe it's about standing firm, keeping our word, holding our ground. You know, there might be elements of it that we want to keep. And but I think one other thing we can do, besides looking at how this urge to punish affects us and where it comes from and how it manifests, is to inquire, is it something skillful? In other words, if I do punish, will it bring me the result that I wish? Will it bring well-being to myself and others? Will it end suffering in myself and others? And really honestly inquire about that. Generally, when we punish another out of the wish to punish, out of the wish to diminish them in some way, that doesn't usually end up bringing about the result that we want. If they feel diminished, they will come back and punish us in return somehow, right? So we look deeply into this. Is this really going to be beneficial if I give in to this urge? So that's one other piece to look carefully at. And there may be other ways to respond to that behavior that we don't like without punishment, that are more effective, that are more successful in bringing about the situation that we want. So thank you very much for that question. I think maybe we can take one more question. This is, thank you for this beautiful space and teaching. Could you speak a little bit on how to be inclusive when holding our own traumas and all the strong emotions that arise, especially fear? Wonderful question. Because it's challenging to hold space for others, which is what inclusiveness is, right? But inclusiveness is also about holding space for ourselves. If we have trauma, if we have this strong emotion of fear, maybe the first thing is to be inclusive of that, is to really honor and bring care to our own trauma, our own fear. And
give that space. So feel it in the body. Honor that it's here. When it's here, feel it, breathe with it, hold it, embrace it. Oh, my fear, you're here. I see you. I'm here for you. I'm holding you. We can hold it like we're holding a crying baby. And we rock it and we soothe it. We say, my little fear, I'm here for you. I won't leave you. But we need mindfulness in order to do that. It's the energy of mindfulness that allows us to meet our fear with that energy of a mother or a caretaker that loves this child that's crying. That's the child of our fear, of our trauma. I also think it's really important to work with trauma in the body, and finding someone who does like somatic experiencing is one way, or there's integral somatic psychotherapy is another similar practice that someone can guide you through of feeling the trauma, releasing by expanding it in the body, by letting it have more space. So working with someone who can really support you to feel and care for and allow that emotion to be there and to experience it in the body, it's very helpful. So these things get lodged in the body, and so they need to be released from the body, our traumas, our strong emotions. So that's, I would say, an important part is working with it in the body, and an experienced somatic practitioner can help us do that. Meditation can also help. It's different people resonate with different practices, so you can see what works for you. Maybe both can go together. Don't fault yourself if you have trouble being inclusive with other things. If you maybe first need to be inclusive with your own fear, your own trauma, don't think that you should try to include, you know, all the difficulties around you first. Take care of what's arising, and then you can, as you move through those inside of you, you have more space, more room to be inclusive of what's around you. Okay. So really grateful to all of you for your presence here. It's really lovely to be back with this community. Thank you for your heartfelt questions. I'm sorry we didn't get to all of them. I look forward to being with you on the course that starts Tuesday if you're able to join. I also wanted to let you know, in addition to this Buddhist Christian group, I hope to be starting a monthly group of some sort. Stay in touch with me. You can sign up for my newsletter on my website, kyrajewel.com. I also plan to do small group mentoring starting next year. If that's of interest, you can write to me on my website and I'll put you on the list to let you know when that happens. But I hope to offer many different ways to continue to practice together if that's of interest to you. So a deep bow to all of you, and much, much love. May we all grow in inclusiveness and the ability to stand in the midst of things as they are, with balance, with equanimity. So be well, everyone. Thank you so much.